In this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, we'll have DIY retro Raspberry Pi love. Huawei's got a new mate for you. We'll be tracing rays and the mysterious Atari VCS console and details of our completely awesome AMD Raven Ridge Killer Gaming PC giveaway. So stick around. Hey, welcome back to Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks. I'm Dave Altavilla, and with me again, as always, are two more geeks. I'm going to be the half geek because I'm feeling that way today, not full geek cred. Marco and Chris are here. Marco Cipetta from the beautiful state of Connecticut. Chris from the also from the Northeast in Maine, where we're about to get hammered with more snow. How are we
Don't
doing,
Don't mention
fellas?
It. Pretend it doesn't exist.
How are we doing? What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Doing all right. Handling Snowpocalypse 2018 okay right now. It seems to actually have slowed down, just have some flurries at the moment. But, you know, a couple of flights canceled on me. I was supposed to be out of town. Can't explain what it was for, but missing some cool stuff today.
We will say you were supposed to spend some quality time with the folks at Intel, but that's all we can say.
I wasn't going to even go that. Oh, well, since you did.
Yeah, it's all right. We'll be all right. No. Yeah, I know. I mean, heck, it stinks. Things get canceled. I'm traveling out to NVIDIA GTC next week. Start actually heading out on Sunday. And fortunately, it looks like I will have clear sailing there. No snow in the forecast. Chris, what's going on up in God's country, Maine, where men are men and so is everybody else. No.
Well, things are going much better now because Brittany just brought me a beer. So
that's always a good thing. Yeah, my goodness. The wife is taking care of business. Look at that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brittany, for keeping Chris cheerful.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, just, bracing for the snow, which isn't going to be too great because my snowblower is kind of, I don't know if there's a bad belt or something on it. So I've got to deal with that. It's not going to be fun, but otherwise going better.
Are you equally gifted with snowblower repair as you are with system admin stuff?
No, I wouldn't put me around engines. Probably not a good thing.
Yeah. What's your snow removal plan, Marco? Shoveling back.
I positioned the cars in the middle of the driveway so that I could shovel in front and behind them. Then I will move the cars out and hopefully not have a bunch to do in the middle.
Yes. Got to have a plan. Got to be ready. Oh, man. Well, you know, let's dive in because God knows we've got work to do. And let's chat about the headlines. There's lots to talk about this week in the land of tech. Let's start off with a little chat real quick about what you're looking at us through, which is the Logitech C922 Pro Stream webcam. I would say they are sponsoring this podcast as a result. Marco and I are both rocking that. Chris, did you get yours plugged in?
Mine is in and running.
So the three of us, the trio, is now fully represented and rendered via Logitech C922 Pro Stream webcam. That's a mouthful, dang it. So this camera is actually pretty good for live streaming in general. That's what it's targeted for game streamers, for Twitchers, and for casters like us. I'll be twitchy, I guarantee it. So thanks, Logitech. This is good stuff. We're trying them out, giving you all a look at the capabilities of these cameras, and let us know what you think in the comments below or in the chat, which is happening now. Hop in the live chat and ask questions, fire away. But we will start off with a project that Marco took on himself, how to build a Commodore 64 with Raspberry Pi Zero for under $50. Little retro gaming love, courtesy of Raspberry Pi and Marco, who wielded that sorcery. Tell us all about it, buddy.
So really fun, cool stuff for an old time nerd like me. My very first computer was a Commodore 64. Lots of people in my generation, in my age group, really cut their technology teeth on the C64. So it holds a really, you know, special place in my heart. Lots of people still love it. There is a vibrant Facebook community still talks about all things Commodore all the time. So a few months ago, actually, I think it was almost a year ago at this point, crazy, I did an article on building an Amiga emulator using the Raspberry Pi. And that was super popular. The Commodore 64 was an even more popular machine than the Amiga, so I figured let's do the same thing with the C64, but with a little twist. So let me just pull this guy out. So this was my little mini Amiga. And look this at that one, cute thing. Yeah, this one was based on the regular old Raspberry Pi. This is the Raspberry Pi everybody knows and loves. Of course, mine has a active cooling and some heat sinks because I overclocked it like a nut job. But
you are a nut job.
The C64 obviously a much less powerful machine than an Amiga. It was running back in the day. I hope I can get this thing open. Back in the day, it was running a MOS 6510 processor at, it was just over 1 megahertz in the US, just under 1 megahertz in Europe. So you don't need as much power as a Pi. So I built the C64 emulator on the Pi Zero just to show how small the Pi Zero is. This is the regular Pi. And then the Pi Zero, look at how much smaller that thing is.
It's very
similar. You have fewer ports. So there are some drawbacks. Like if you want to plug in multiple game pads, you need to have a USB hub attached. But this project was super easy. On the Amiga side, there was some manual work to do because of the way the distro was called Amibian. The distro was set up to transfer your files over. The Combian 64, which is the Commodore 64 emulator build for the Pi, the developer did some really cool stuff to really make it as easy as possible. All you have to do to set up your own C64 emulator is flash an image to a micro SD card using some freely available tools, free downloads, and then literally copy your C64 image files to a USB flash drive and just run a built-in tool built right into Combian that transfers everything over. And if you don't want to do any other tweaks, you're done. You're ready to roll. You're ready to emulate a Commodore 64 in all its glory, with way more horsepower than a C64 ever had, which doesn't really matter because everything has to be slowed down to run properly. But you get, you know, an awesome C64 experience on modern displays, the old retro machines. It's a real pain in the butt to get them on a modern display for, you know, really not a lot of money. $32.99 for this whole Raspberry Pi Zero kit on Amazon. And it came with everything you needed to go. Now, if you want to do something really cool, you grab one of those retro Pi cases that are 3D printed to look like the old machines. And, you know, I have my Amiga one. I don't have the C64 one handy, but look at how cool. Like, they're so awesome. You could have a whole array of retro machines and fit it on a tiny shelf. You don't need, you know, a bunch of space to show off your retro PC collection. I think it's pretty awesome.
Dude, Speaking of your retro PC collection, I know you were talking about getting shadow boxes for your old units. Did you ever get on that?
I never did it. I still have an Amiga 500, C64, Commodore 128, TI-44, a Trash 80, and something else. Oh, and an Atari ST still in storage. And if you watch, I hate to plug them because they stole my article, but if you watch the Commodore story, there's one of the guys actually, I forget who was being interviewed, but on his wall, he has a VIC-20 in a light box. And it's basically opened up so you can see the keyboard and the PCB. And I think it just looks awesome. If I had the space, I would love to do light boxes for every one of those machines and then build these little tiny emulators. So this way you could just have one display, switch between HDMI outputs and have everything ready to roll. It would be so cool.
You are full geeked nerd, my friend.
That's right. Proud. It's now cool to be a geek.
Yes, you're right. You're right. Now that is impressive stuff. And there is quite a following out there in the community for anything Commodore, anything Amiga. Really just, you know, lots of passion still for that golden age of computing. Tell us what can you run on that thing? What are you running on your Raspberry Pi that's Commodore driven?
So the games that stuck with me when I was young, there was a game called Impossible Mission. And if you go to the very last line of the article, it's actually the opening line from the game. And one person on Facebook caught the reference and made a comment. But I was playing Impossible Mission, was a game that I had fond memories of. The Last Ninja is a awesome game that like everybody that had a Commodore 64 loves. Defender of the Crown, the Cinemaware titles were all fantastic on the C64. Now, I'm not going to pretend that, you know, this is going to be some everyday PC. This is just some fun thing for retro gaming. And if you, you know, not only if you have fond memories of the machine like me, if you just want to experience what it was like to game on these things, to understand where we were and where we are today, it's just a cheap way to experience this stuff. And I think it's really fun to not only learn how to set it up, but to play these old games, and you could see the progression from, you know, the 8-bit generation to the 64-bit generation all the way through to today.
Are you educating your daughters about the golden age of computing? Are you showing them how it's done, man?
You bet your butt. Izzy, my older daughter, she's told me that when she goes back to Inventor Camp this year, last year she went to Inventor Camp where she got to learn electronics and stuff. This year at Inventor Camp, she's going to build me a modern Amiga. So I'm psyched.
There you go. Nice. Nice. Chris,
she always is this your asks, kind of... She always asks if, is that an Amiga? Is that an Amiga?
She gets that passion from dad. That's what I'm guessing. And that's all right. That's yes. Great. Chris, is this your kind of jam? Do you geek out over this kind of stuff every once in a while?
So I do love looking at all the old hardware. It's really cool, but I have to admit it was kind of before my time. So I didn't really get the firsthand growing up with it experience. I played some DOS games when I was young and, you know, moving into Windows 95, 98 kind of titles. But it's I like going back to the retro stuff because it's so much closer to like being on the metal, you know. You can feel like you're actually using a computer. Things today get very, very abstracted, and it's more just the game experience. It doesn't feel like you're computing. Kind of my take.
Interesting. Interesting. The GUI removes you too far from the machine. You need the code. I got you.
So, you know, that's a fun point with Combian. So Combian has an auto start tool where you can go to a menu, select your disk image, and just auto start it. But yeah. Back in the day, what you had to do on a C64 was insert your disk or tape, type in a command line, it would go to the drive, load what you were trying to play, it would tell you it was ready, and then you actually had to type run or a sys command to run what you just loaded into memory. It was very, very manual, crazy stuff. I still love it. I'm laughing thinking about it.
That's a strong memory I have back when we had Windows 95, it must have been. And there was a NASCAR game we had that you had to go into DOS to launch. And the day I figured out the command line to launch the game was a very happy day, because then I could just do it and not wait for dad to launch it for me.
I have Chris. the worst memories of a Star Wars game called Rebel Assault that was a DOS game. And you had to have your... expanded and extended memory settings perfect. So I was tweaking QAMM settings to no end in my config sys file to get that game to run right. Ugh. I actually punched a hole in the wall at one point because I was hitting my later years and I was a big guy back in the day.
I remember I used to play F-15 Strike Eagle over a 14.4 modem with a buddy of mine. You know, yep. That, I mean, yeah, but Chris is the millennial of the team here for sure, right? I mean, Chris, like, dude, you're a puppy, relatively speaking.
Yep.
Well, that's good stuff. Good stuff, Marco. Thanks for that. Come on by the site, check it out. Marco gives you the full how-to with an example of all the gear you need to build your own DIY retro Raspberry Pi Commodore machine. And, I'm glitching a little bit. Sorry about that, folks. I think that's my connection, but we'll try and clean that up. And yeah, swing on by, and he shows you how to do it, you know, including all the steps with software, and away you go. Let's move on to the land of mobile stuff. I actually took a look, as well as Paul Lilly from the team, who joins us here on 2.5 Geeks every once in a while. I took a look at the Huawei Mate 10 Pro. This is a new 6-inch Android flagship from the folks at Huawei. and got it right here. It is a gem of a device. I'll try and not blow out the screen too much. Yeah, there we go. I'm blowing it out. What are you going to do? It's hard to do that. nice device, 6-inch, full HD display, 2160 by 1080 full HD display. So that 18 by 9 format, but 1080p still, OLED display, HDR10 capable. And it is powered by a Huawei Kirin 970 octa-core processor, as well as 6 gig of RAM. And it is strapped with 128 gigs of storage default on board. MSRP is $799. It also is rocking, of course, Android 8 Oreo and the Huawei EMUI, which we'll get to in a little bit. But Huawei's, Mate 10 Pro, impressive device, handles really well. The Kirin 970 processor, octa-core processor, with an G72 ARM Mali graphics core, actually performs a little bit faster than a Snapdragon 835. Not quite as fast, certainly, as the Snapdragon 845, the latest generation Snapdragon 845 from Qualcomm, or Apple's A11 Bionic that's in the iPhone 10. But it is a snappy phone, to be sure. Got a potent processor with 6 gigs of RAM, so it feels like it does anything you throw at it, you know, with ease. And you know, really impressive stuff. Has dual cameras in the back, so you've got dual 20 megapixel monochrome f1.6 camera and a 12 megapixel RGB f1.6 aperture camera on the back with Leica lenses, so dual cameras, and then a front-facing 8-megapixel selfie cam. The camera on this phone actually competes with the likes of Google's Pixel 2, I would say even the Galaxy S9 and S9 Plus that we reviewed recently at Hot Hardware. It has excellent low-light response, real good in terms of minimizing noise and low-light shots. And good, I would say good color balance and clarity, not a lot of over sharpening or over saturation like you do tend to see occasionally in the Samsung phones. Just a very competitive camera. It also, with those dual cameras in the back, allows impressive bokeh effects as well. So now you can have a real sharp foreground subject and in the background nicely blurred for a stylized shot. That effect that the Galaxy Note 8 first brought out, and then the Pixel 2 seemed to perfect with what Google did with the camera and the Pixel 2. Impressive stuff, 4,000 milliamp hour battery as well. So this thing is a battery beast. It was in the top quarter, I would say, actually maybe even the top 10 or 20% of all the phones we've tested in terms of battery life. The one sort of, I guess, elephant in the room that we have to talk about is that the U.S. government came out, several security agencies in the U.S. government came out and said, we caution you against using Huawei phones and was it ZTE as well, due to security concerns. And really what you do there is read between the lines. And what they're saying is they can't get a backdoor into this device. And there's also potential ties with China sending data back to the mothership for Huawei, which is also the biggest communications carrier over there and one of the biggest smartphone manufacturers in the world. So I don't know what you guys think about all that, but it's a capable device for actually less than $799 now, MSRP. There's some pretty good deals going on. Powerful, capable, great phone, Android Oreo. Really, you know, I would say the one drawback we saw was that the EMUI overlay over Android Oreo was a little bit heavy, a little bit janky in spots, but not bad. Still very serviceable. Great phone for, you know, a competitive price with a great camera. What do you guys think? Are we fretting too much with our tinfoil hats over concerns that this thing might be a spy machine?
I don't think so for a couple of reasons. I mean, if you work for a government agency or you have some sort of, you know, high level contacts, all right, maybe take those warnings more serious than, you know, average Joe consumer. You know, but in this day and age, everybody's stealing your data. Like, literally everybody is stealing everything they can about you in any way possible. It's only a matter of time before news breaks about another manufacturer or app or, you know, something in your smartphone that's mining your data. So if you love
even
the phone,
if you're not explicitly on their platform, like Facebook forming shadow profiles for people who have never signed up for Facebook.
Exactly. It's like it's happening all the time. So if you're not communicating any kind of, you know, national security information on your phone, you know, your data is going to get stolen no matter who you use. And, you know, just don't tweet anything that's going to bring down the friggin' U.S. government. I don't know what to say.
You know? Move that out may off be grid. It. Talk to no one. Basically don't exist.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
What's the old saying? If it's connected in any way to the internet, it's compromisable, right? Yeah. Is that a word?
And it is.
Yeah.
Even beyond that, you've got air gap systems that can be broken into. So where there's a will, there's a way.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I don't think, I personally don't think it's any reason to, you know, overlook this phone. It's surprising that it hasn't been picked up by major U.S. carriers. I think everybody's sort of, I mean, we all know major carriers are sort of in the hip pocket of government anyways. You know, so there's probably some strong, ties to that situation and why the carriers aren't picking them up, but nobody's picked it up. AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, you know, none of them. And so you're on your own. But I mean, hey, these days in the market, in the you know, the age of unlocked off contract phones, well, a lot of folks are doing that. I think it's a compelling option. You know, is it going to have the kind of legs maybe that a Galaxy S9 or the next generation Pixel 3 when it comes out? I think it will. I think performance is there as well, certainly from a camera standpoint. So yeah, I think it's a good option in the market, even when you talk about something as compelling as Samsung's Galaxy S9 Plus, which I personally love, or LG V30, which I use as a daily driver. Great phones. This is a good option among them. So, but in the chat, what's that? Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, it just reminds me of this Onion article. I'll post it over to the chat. From 2009, of the Google opt-out feature lets users protect privacy by moving to remote village. Oh, it's not letting me post the address.
Nice.
You can Google. There you go. You'll find it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's a nice device. Aaron Powell in the chat says, love my Mate 10 Pro. And hey, good for you, bud. Glad you're enjoying that device. We did too. Came out a while ago. It took us a while to get it in and you know, get up to speed with it. But we have a full review up on the site. Check that out. All the benchmarks there. You'll see it competes. It's sort of middle to top, middle of the pack in terms of general performance. In terms of graphics, it's right there as well. Not going to hang with A11 Bionic and an iPhone 10 or the Snapdragon 845. But, you know, with 6 gig of RAM and with the kind of horsepower that's on board, it pretty much anything you're going to do on a smartphone, this thing just sails right through it, no problem. And it's built really well. I'm gonna try and hold it up again and see if I can get a little bit better look at it for you. There you go. It's got a cool little signature stripe in the back. This is the platinum gray variant. Fingerprint sensor in the rear where it should be, right in the middle. You can you know, just grab right onto that easy. And just a very well built device. Let's see if I can it's so hard to get it on camera. Well built device, thin bezels all around. And even comes with a built-in, you know, they strap on a screen protector for you and they give you a clear case with the purchase. So I think a good value, solid value in devices for Android handsets on the market. The Huawei Mate 10 Pro. Check out the full review. You'll see the battery life numbers there as well. It'll last forever.
All right. There's a varmint in the background.
What's that?
There's a varmint in the background.
There was a varmint?
At your
door. Was it at my door? Was there a Jack Russell?
Yeah.
One of the Jack Russells were rustling. Max and Yogi often make an appearance in my smartphone reviews as camera subjects because they make interesting camera subjects. Lots of colors and textures with pups. So we tend to get them in the mix when we need them, and we appreciate their contribution. Yes. All right. Let's move on. Let's roundtable a little something that's impressing us this week in the land of computer graphics, NVIDIA RTX and Microsoft. What is it? RDX or DXR? Excuse me. DXR. That's what it is.
NVIDIA RTX.
Yeah, NVIDIA RTX and Microsoft DXR.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So, yeah. So, real-time ray tracing coming to games soon near you, as soon as developers get a hold of the tools and software that NVIDIA is enabling for their next-generation GPUs and Microsoft is enabling in the DirectX 12 API. Marco, let's chat that up. Impressive stuff. I don't know if you can roll some video, John. I sent you a link earlier on that. There was an Unreal Engine video that they showed some dynamic lighting effects with, which was just like, wow. Good stuff. Marco, what are your thoughts? And then we'll kick it around for a little chat.
My thoughts are this is awesome. So ray tracing is sort of the holy grail of graphics. When you go see a movie and the CGI is indistinguishable from real life, it's because it's lighted correct. The materials look correct. Now, the demo that John is showing right now on screen, that is rendered in, this is not a movie. This is rendered in real time in Unreal Engine 4. It was just demoed at GTC. I forget the name of the demo, but as you can see, it looks absolutely amazing because all of the lighting, all of the reflections are basically accurate to real life. You know, they're photorealistic. It just looks incredible. Now, we don't know what kind of hardware this is being rendered on. For all we know, this is 4 Titan Vs. You know, that's $12,000 worth of graphics cards. But to get the kind of smooth performance, or NVIDIA claimed it's only available with a Volta class GPU, doesn't specify which one, assuming Titan Vs are going out to developers to test with for now. Otherwise, something would have leaked about another card with Volta on it. But this sort of lays the foundation for the future of gaming graphics. You know, when pixel shaders came out, it took a while for them to sort of ramp up, and now they're used in basically every single game. For developers that want to come as close to photorealistic quality graphics, that's probably going to happen with ray tracing as well, especially since Microsoft has now made it a part of DX12. The current implementation, we're told, will run on any DX12 class hardware that can do DX12 class compute, but performance is going to vary widely. I would suspect nothing is actually going to be playable on current gen stuff, except for maybe a Titan V. But next gen hardware, I think this is going to be a major focus.
Yeah, interesting stuff. They also noted that for NVIDIA, with respect to Volta, the Volta GPU architecture, that the Volta engine, the Tensor cores built in, help to accelerate ray tracing as well. So they actually utilize those Tensor cores for more than just machine learning in real time ray tracing as well. I sort of worry about that. I wonder about that because obviously, that says, Volta, their next generation GPU architecture, you would think is going to be brought down to the consumer level. It's currently a workstation / AI card now. And that's probably the development vehicle for game developers to, establish this real-time ray tracing effect and their software that takes advantage of that in the API, the DirectX 12 API. So I think what we're hearing is, the hardware is coming, but it's not quite there yet. Was that your read through it as well, Marco? And sort of a build up over time as architectures, but can take advantage of it. But I mean, they also said, any DirectX 12 class graphics card should be able to run it with varying degrees of performance. So I was kind of, there were mixed signals there, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could run the latest games on a DX12 card from 2 years ago on an entry-level DX12 card, but it's going to be a slideshow. I think the same thing would apply to this with the Titan V and a card with dedicated hardware and something, which is probably the development vehicle for this, as you mentioned. That will probably be the okay, this works and it's fluid, maybe not at super high resolutions, but you know, here's what's possible. Whereas if you go with a lower end card, it will be able to execute the code, but do it much more slowly. I think that's what I took from the conversation, because this is laying the foundation for the future. This isn't something that, you know, people are going to start patching current games and we're going to have, you know, ray tracing. It's just, that's not how it's going to work. This is going to build up over time as the install base of hardware is there.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think it's important to. I think it's important to point out that traditionally these kinds of scenes would be sent off to render farms and take hours, if not days or weeks, to complete. So to see it in real time, even if they are throwing four Titans at it, whatever, is pretty freaking impressive. But beyond that, there are some other things I noticed just about this particular demo is everything in it appears to be a pretty shiny surface. So I wonder how it's going to work with mixed textures, maybe some, you know, skin textures or something like that, and see how it handles mixed situations.
That's what
I think. I think it's not the surface that matters, but the number of rays and bounces being calculated. Yeah. So it, you know, if they're using the same number of light rays and calculating to the same number of bounces, I don't think the surface type will matter, but I'm not certain.
Yeah, it just depends on how much light reflects off of each different surface. And I guess, yeah, what Chris is saying is there's varying degrees of reflection and refraction and all the different light, paths that happen in varying degrees of textures and a complex scene. And that's really what it's all about is, yeah, Chris, I think your observation there is interesting in that scene is an elevator, which is a fairly metallic static scene. There's, you know, guys in stormtrooper outfits with, you know, fairly predictable, textures on their stuff. So yeah, it's interesting to hear and see how this is all going to play out and how this all gets, you know, worked into, rendering a scene in an actual game engine. It's not easy. It is literally, as we coined it, the holy grail of game rendering, or one of the holy grails of how you light something and reflect, you know, a scene accurately and naturally such that it's indistinguishable from actual film,
right?
Which
absolutely,
that's kind of wild, just wild.
Yeah, beyond polygons, just looking at lighting, even in modern low poly games that have really good lighting, the difference it makes is just incredible. You know, you can see some very simple games that just have neat lighting tricks and stuff like that. And so to add ray tracing to that in real time, we should see some nice looking stuff coming out.
But what do you think, Mark? Are we talking, we're talking next generation GPUs mostly. Are we talking a year or two down the road? Where would you throw a dart at it?
If I were to guess, a consumer class Volta will launch late Q3 this year, maybe Q4, and NVIDIA will have some sort of partnership with a game developer to have a showcase title for the hardware.
Wow. That is a bold prediction. That's guessing.
I'm guessing.
Right. But there's no NDA being broken here. Yeah. Nope. No, it's cool stuff though. Check it out. We've got some demos on the site, NVIDIA RTX and Microsoft DirectX R, DirectX Ray Tracing. The way to make your computer graphics look photorealistic, impressive stuff.
So we actually have a couple of questions in the chat related to this. Joe Nexus was asking, do you think DXR will be Volta only? I think DXR as it stands today and what was shown, it's all being shown on Volta because that's probably the only thing that can run it fast. But it's not going to be Volta only. And he also asked, do you think there'll be a Tensor Core based card will be expensive, around $1,000? I don't know what NVIDIA is going to do in the consumer space with the Tensor Cores, but the rep that did the briefing on RTX did say that there is some undisclosed hardware in Volta that they aren't discussing yet that accelerates ray tracing, but that also the Tensor Cores could be used to assist and also accelerate it. You know, being able to do that much math that wide, that quick has to be helpful for some of this. So originally, I didn't think Tensor Cores were coming to consumer. Now I think Tensor Cores will come to consumer, but I don't know if it'll be a chip as big as Titan V. I'm not sure. It's all speculation right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Titan V card, I think it's a 12 gig card or is it a 16 gig card? I'm trying to remember. We actually reviewed it.
I forget too. I think it was 12.
That's a $3,000 card.
Yeah.
So it's not crazy. Like, I mean, you know, you see five and $7,000, frankly, you know, professional workstation GPUs, due to all their certifications and whatnot. So you think about 3,000 versus the top end Titans that have retailed for close to 1,000, you know, maybe you could get in that sniffing range. I don't know.
Yep.
But cool stuff. Check it out if you haven't seen it yet. DirectX real-time ray tracing and NVIDIA RTX technology, the release that they came out with this week and or last week. Or was it this week? I can't even remember now. It's all a blur. Impressive stuff, though. So let's move on before I bust Marco up some more with my middle-aged brain. Let's talk about the land of security and vulnerabilities. AMD details Ryzen, EPYC, and chipset mitigation plan for master key fallout and Ryzen fall vulnerabilities. That fishy little security document that came out not too long ago, and the firm behind it with potential ties to stock manipulations and things like that. There are, you know, all kinds of accusations in the wind about why these flaws were suddenly discovered and how they were brought to light, and with only 24 hours notice to AMD. That's the whole backstory. But AMD said, well, even though, you know, these vulnerabilities only exist with admin access to the machine, if you have admin access, can you actually exploit them? We're going to patch them anyways. What do you know about this, Chris?
Well, I think if they had gone about this disclosure in a typical manner, giving 90 days notice or more, or, you know, 6 months, like we saw with Spectre and Meltdown, I think this particular exploit would have just been a change log line somewhere and yeah, no one would have really given it a second thought, because it does require admin access and so many other things. And, you know, you've got Microsoft's credential guard and other things that can help prevent it as well. So there's definitely a lot more drama than there needs to be here, but it is important to say these are flaws. They do exist. They're not made up out of thin air like some people were initially saying, but definitely not as extreme as CTS Labs would have had us believe with their initial pronouncement.
What do we know about the notion of needing, you know, admin level access? Could you not exploit these in the cloud with virtual machine admin level access, for example? Or does it go deeper than that?
So I'm not sure of the exact mechanics behind this one, but if you have administrative access to a cloud server, or, you know, even a server sitting in your data center, your computer, wherever, once someone has that access, they can kind of do what they want anyways. there's kind of the exploit from that perspective. They could potentially put some backdoors in this way that would be harder to detect, I suppose, even once you think you've cleaned up whatever the initial breach was. Right. Another potential avenue for this is, say you order a computer and it gets intercepted by someone before it arrives to you, and they've planted it on before you receive it. Again, I think there's still other ways that already exist that they could do that, because it has been done. But it is another avenue in. So it's a little difficult to raise the alarm too high on this, but it is something to be aware of. As far as AMD side with their reaction, so they've said that they've got BIOS firmware patches coming out the next couple of weeks, should be mitigated pretty well. without performance hits, like again we see with Spectre and Meltdown patches. And then they're going to be investigating the manufacturer of their Promontory chipset, which is alleged to be Azus Tech, and see what they can lock down on that avenue. But again, I still think had they gone through the proper disclosure process that everyone wants, you know, giving 90 days at least notice and working with AMD rather than essentially creating a hit, this kind of would have been a non-story.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting the way you term that, essentially creating a hit. That's what it felt like, you know. It felt like, you know, I mean, you're registering a domain, AMD flaws, the whole thing, and it just didn't smell right from the get-go, and so felt like it was just, you know, sort of trumped up unnecessarily, even though, you know, legitimately some issues here. And I think that's sort of the bottom line with this whole thing for most folks, similar to Spectre and Meltdown. If you're an end user, this is much less of a concern for you. It's more of an enterprise level concern where boxes are being shipped in, you know, folks may have admin access, you know, setting up and imaging machines and things like that. The average end user, again, what, you know, you're probably not going to be concerned with this, and AMD's patching it without a performance hit. So that's good news too. Much ado about nothing, really, Chris, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's still something there. But yeah, CTS Labs can not too thrilled with them. They're obviously a bit of a sham organization, purpose driven. Yeah. Probably to line their own profits. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Marco, do you have any other words of wisdom on this, or did we beat this dead horse?
I think Chris covered it perfectly, and I think he's 100% right. The had notice been given to AMD, it would have been fixed and patched right in the background very quickly. No one would have heard of anything. So the fact that it wasn't handled that way, and the way, you know, the site was already registered, it just screams of some shady business practices. You know, and also if you step back and think about it, because you need administrator access and some local administrator, you know, have to be at the PC, you know, in the case of, you know, flashing the BIOS, if it's compromised at that point already anyway, you can install whatever you want. If you have local administrator access, and you know, some of them, you have to flash a compromised firmware. I would bet on a large number of PCs, if you flash a compromised firmware or you have access to alter the firmware, you could do a lot of shiesty stuff. So I'm not putting too much stock in all this. It's not a huge deal to me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, cool. Anyways, we'll chalk that up for a little bit of experience, I guess, because my goodness, you know, you think about how important security has become in this day and age, and what a you know, buzzed topic it is. People are finding, you know, there's all kinds of opportunity for, you know, whether it be nefarious acts, you know, through exploits, or, you know, even shady business practices through the security industry. And I mean, it's an ever evolving thing, and we've always sort of, you know, known that this is the nature of the beast. When you talk about security, there's lots of good and bad actors, and some that, you know, sort of straddle the line in between, shall we say. And I think the field is going to get even more interesting as the years go on, as we get more and more equipped with computing in our daily lives, as our data becomes more valuable than ever before, our personal data.
At the end of the day, we've tricked sand into making us think that it can think. So there's a lot more that can go wrong than go right.
sand as in silicon? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot more that can go wrong. Guaranteed. All right. Well, let's move on to a couple of interesting little tidbits in the land of consoles. And I want to get your take on these guys. I'll just mention real quick, there's an opportunity right now. This isn't so as notable as what Atari's got on tap. That's a real interesting product. But there's a deal out there right now. We had a story. Original PlayStation 3 owners could be entitled to a $65 check from Sony. That is as a result of a class action lawsuit where years ago, Sony came out with the Fat Boy. There it is, the PlayStation 3 Fat Boy console, the original. And one of the checkboxes of its feature list was the ability to run Linux. And there was a passionate, as you can imagine, Linux community behind it when it came out. Eventually, Sony pulled that feature out because folks were doing all kinds of things, including exploiting the console itself for getting free games and, you know, copyright infringement of games and stuff like that. And so Sony rolled off the feature, and a few years later, lo and behold, today we have a class action suit against Sony that was awarded damages. And yes, if you have proof of purchase or even a serial number, you could be $65 richer on this class action suit. And, you know, it's funny for me, I don't know about you guys, but every time I get a class action, you know, you could be a benefactor letter in the mail. Anytime I get one of those, it's not worth bothering with. It's like $5 or, you know, $2 or, you know, have a nice day. Here's your cut after the lawyers got most of it, right? This time it's 65. It's not bad. $65. That would cover a lot now, wouldn't it?
Get you a game.
There you go. Pay for your Linux distro of choice easily. Well, anyways, good stuff. If you're out there and you're still in ownership of a PlayStation 3 or can prove you owned one, yeah, I don't know, have to have ownership, but well, anyways, go ahead,
Chris. I'm a little salty about the PS3 still because I had one of those. I think it was the 60 gig model. And at some point, Sony had put out an update that basically caused the laser in the disk drive to stay on and fried the drive. And I don't think there was ever any official acknowledgement of that, even though I'm far from the only one who experienced it.
Wow.
And it, yeah, effectively killed my PlayStation. I'm sure I could have replaced the drive or something, but at the time I didn't have the means to address that. But I think that would have been right about this time around 2010 when the other operating system feature was taken away.
Are there any lawyers in the audience now listening to this? You may have another class action you can dig into.
Oh, it's been discussed to death online. So I doubt anything's going to come from it at this point, if it hasn't already. And it could have. It's been years since I've actually looked into it. Yeah, that was a really sad day when it would no longer read discs.
Dude, the lawyers will sue a ham sandwich. Yeah, I mean, they're coming out today with an award for folks that they had Linux on the machine back then. I can't even believe that. And this, you know, how many years later? You never know.
Yeah.
But anyways, all right, we'll move on to Atari's Atari Box becomes Atari VCS, available with modern and retro controllers at the ready. There you go. There it is. The Atari now VCS, which stands for Video Computer System. That's some serious acronym ninja-ism right there, right? Video Computer System. I love the retro feel with that whole thing, though. Atari VCS. And yeah, you've got a standard, what looks like, Xbox style controller. Forgive the word, but that's what came to mind. And then the Atari joystick we all know and love, with a little bit of modernistic spit shine on it, looking pretty swank. This is an interesting machine. It is going to be preloaded with lots of Atari retro goodness, a bunch of Atari classic games on board. And it will have the horsepower, however, on board to function like a full PC, because it's powered by an AMD APU of some sort. So x86 CPU with some graphics on board. Who knows? Maybe it's a Ryzen Raven Ridge variant of some sort, specifically for this console. But PC, full PC-like capabilities is what was noted in the release for the Atari VCS. Kind of intrigued by this thing. What do you guys think about it?
I mean, I'm intrigued by it for the retro stuff. It's an AMD semi-custom chip, so we know it's going to be probably a similar core to what's inside an Xbox or a PS4. I'm not sure how developers are going to be on board for, you know, modern bleeding edge titles for the hardware. I almost don't care because, like, it seems like it probably, if there's an array of apps for it, let's say it's running Linux or, you know, some Android variant, if there's apps for media streaming and then I have access to a huge library of retro Atari games, which it's going to have, and it's not exorbitantly expensive, I'm probably in on that thing.
Yeah, man. And you think about how well Nintendo did with the NES Mini. I mean, that thing, they sold, you know, it's going to depend on pricing. It's going to be interesting to see what this thing comes priced at. I think that will dictate a lot of its traction in the marketplace. But yeah, intriguing and exciting. Chris, what are your thoughts? Are you in on this thing if it comes to market?
So I think I'm not seeing it in our article. Is this the one that was starting on Kickstarter?
I was nervous for a while because they suspended the Kickstarter for, like, it was supposed to happen and then that stopped. But I think it was to come up with the marketing plan for this GDC announcement.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I do remember seeing that and I kind of had some concerns when the Kickstarter went dark. But if they can pull it off, it should be interesting for some good classic games like you want. I'm interested to see what they'll do it from a new title perspective. If we're going to see like anything approaching modern AAA games out of it or what it's really going to run. So it should be interesting to watch. Yeah. A lot of the Nintendo side of it with the classic NES and SNES does, of course, come from being Nintendo. Definitely had a larger market share than just about anyone else has ever seen. So a lot of nostalgia in their court that Atari may not still have. We'll see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's a good observation, Chris. But yeah, they say tons of classic Atari retro games on board at the same time, capable of delivering a full PC experience for the TV. I mean, so you roll that in, maybe you get a little streaming service with an app, sort of marketplace or something like that with this thing. Really kind of interesting. And who knows what the folks at Atari could do with some of their classic titles and maybe revamping them for this box. Looking at the box itself from a thermal perspective, chassis size and whatnot, it's looking like it's not going to be as powerful per se as an Xbox One X or a PlayStation 4. Marco, would you concur with that?
I don't think we can say that based on the chassis, because if they go, let's say they have a very similar capabilities in the semi-custom chip that AMD is doing for them, but it's manufactured on a much newer process, then maybe you can get away passively cooling it with, or just having a heatsink right under those vents. I'm not sure. Go ahead. Sorry, Chris.
Is there any word on what generation of HDMI they're putting in it? 1.4, 2.0.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would think it's going to be 2.0. I don't think it's been explicitly said, but if it's a brand new design, semi-custom with AMD GPU, I'm going to guess it's HDMI 2. And the other thing to consider is maybe porting games from developers that are already working on PS4 and Xbox One games, because they all use AMD CPUs and GPUs now. Maybe there's some ease of portability for games for the platform, but all up in the air. We will know soon enough, I guess.
Yeah, we're on the short list to get a review unit. That's what I'm told. I was contacted back by an official who said, when we have review units available, we will let you know. And I was happy to hear that. Pre-orders will start in April, so next month. And they actually pushed that back. They were actually supposed to go up for pre-order December 14th last year, but Atari announced stating, because of one key element, I'm going to read from the release here. One key element of our checklist, it's taking more time to create the platform and ecosystem the Atari community deserves. Building Atari Box is incredibly important to us, and we will do whatever it takes to be sure it is worth the wait. So they talk about ecosystem and platform behind it, you know, lofty goals, not just here's a box that plays some retro games and can be a little, you know, home theater PC for you as well. They're talking about platform and ecosystem. So we shall see. Bring it, Atari. We love having the options. Good stuff. The new toys. The Atari VCS going up for pre-order in April, and we hopefully will have a review somewhere around that time frame if we're lucky. All right, let's move on to the close, and the exciting close it is as my screen continues to tear. Sorry, that's probably my computer. We have something exciting to announce. We have a giveaway, and it's going to be powered by AMD Ryzen Raven Ridge. Marco, tell us what you know.
We're getting there. So let me, some of the hardware is starting to arrive. I have the motherboard here, and ASRock AB350 Gaming K4 motherboard for Raven Ridge. We are going to have a Raven Ridge processor as well. I'm assuming Ryzen 5 2400G. I just don't have it in hand yet. And Corsair hooking us up with tons of awesome good stuff. We're waiting for details on the specific memory kit, but they are going to supply memory. We're going to have a very cool 570X case from Corsair, the RM750X power supply, a K70 rapid fire mechanical gaming keyboard, and I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, a Glaive RGB mouse. So literally, we're going to give you a killer full rig. I'm going to supply storage. I'm going to build it. I'll make sure everything's working perfectly. Literally, you're going to have to just plug this into your monitor and you are ready to roll with a new gaming PC. And all you're going to have to do to win it is to come by the site, participate in our comments, make some friends, chat it up with some other like-minded folks that love tech, like a couple of Facebook pages, and that is it. It's going to be super easy to win. We will have the details posted the second I have the processor and know the memory kit in hand, but we'll just run it for a few weeks, and you will have a new PC this spring. Stay tuned for the official kickoff.
Are you going to live stream the build?
I don't know if I'll live stream the build. I'll try. Seeing myself on video sometimes makes me want to run and go play in traffic. So better if just the hardware is being streamed for my ego and self-preservation.
You can work it out.
We'll work something out.
Come on now. You're a handsome, gifted geek. Don't act like that. Jeez. No, John, I just tossed a link in the chat for you. Can you put that up? Because I wanted to take a quick peek at this Corsair Crystal Series 570X case.
They're RGB awesome. Case. They're really cool.
Yeah, I don't know if, John, if you can, do you see that in the chat, John? I don't know. He might not be able to see it yet. But, yeah, really cool case. Looks like tempered glass all around. Oh, there it is. Thanks, John. John's the man behind the curtain working the console. Tempered glass all around, RGB lighting, triple fans, baby. You can build some nice stuff in that.
Man, right? I need a new chassis. I don't even know what mine is.
So stick around for that. The spring fling giveaway from Hot Hardware, 2.5 Geeks, the good folks at Corsair, and the fine folks at AMD, and Marco with his ninja-like PC build skills. Stay tuned for that. We'll be announcing it at hothardware.com, where you can find us on the web, twitter.com/hothardware, where you should definitely tweet with us, and we'll tweet you back. At least we'll try. youtube.com/hothardwarevids or hothardware, where we hope you'll thumbs up and subscribe. So hit that reminder button. There's a little reminder button so that you get the little notice that we're going live when we stream. We will be here Wednesdays at 5:30 most weeks. I think next week we may have a little ripple because we're traveling to some shows next week, but usually 5:30 on Wednesdays is the slot. So hit that reminder button and get notified If that's changing, I guess. And then facebook.com/hothighwire. You can find us there too if you trust Zuckerberg and he's not mining your data. So there. Guys, any parting words of wisdom before we sign off?
Yeah, if anybody lives near me and wants to help shovel the snow, please feel free to come by. I'll make you some nice food. I don't feel like shoveling this garbage.
That offer goes for Maine too.
So done with winter. We are so done with winter. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Walking this dog in the snow is torture. Don't get a puppy in spring, because in winter you're outside every hour in the snow dealing with a nut job bouncing around. Yeah. So
see that you get tech tips and pet tips all in one webcast. It's a beautiful thing. Hey, thanks for stopping by, everybody. Take care.